Good morning, everyone. Here now is the latest news of the war, reported by staff members assigned to world capitals. The first news this morning comes from London, England.
This is London. John McVane speaking. Practically no news from Malaya has reached London so far today, and what there is all bad. Authoritative quarters here say the British troops in Malaya are still falling back. Situation on the Malayan mainland, it said, must be considered very, very grave. It's noted that in the absence of detailed communiques and exact information of upcountry conditions, the present status of the British defenders can be only guesswork. It's said that obviously the situation is bad, and the belief is held here that worse news must be expected before it can become better. When authoritative quarters start talking like this, you know that official dispatches and expert study of the situation aren't offering much hope. The London afternoon papers are using headlines like Battle Moves Nearer Singapore. The Evening Standard even breaks all the unwritten war press rules by featuring the horrid word retreat in the headline. The headline says, Battle of Singapore Near After New Retreat. Usually in wartime, it is only your enemy who retreats. You withdraw, fall back, straighten your line, or retire to positions prepared in advance. From press dispatches reaching London about the most hopeful phrases that can be culled, speak of great effort to slow down the Japanese avalanche. I don't think the average Britisher has any doubt that eventually Japan, like Germany, will be thoroughly smashed. But at the moment, he realizes that his countrymen, retreating step by step through the Malayan jungle, are taking a very bad beating. The British press has been consistently critical of official explanations about Malaya, and criticisms by both British and American eyewitnesses in Malaya have been featured here. Most people hope that the island of Singapore itself can be held long enough to serve as an entry base for real reinforcements that will turn the battle. But whether general strategy has decided that the attempt to clear Malaya should be made sooner or later isn't apparent here. Some British observers believe that the Germans will time their expected attack on Malta to coincide with the Japanese drive against Singapore. It's pointed out that the loss of Singapore would open the Indian Ocean to Japanese raiders. At the same time, if the Germans could take Malta, it would practically close the Mediterranean to Allied shipping, and would make the Indian Ocean far more important to the Allies than it is at the moment. Nearly every day, the British press tells of attempts to stamp out food rackets in the black market. The fact that many foods are rationed under government control and that some other foods are very scarce has given a big chance to racketeers who, even in wartime, profit at the expense of their countrymen. Government and press work to reveal and abolish each new trick in dishonest food distribution. A few days ago, sentences of 2 to 4 years in prison were handed out to some men who had stolen $20,000 worth of meat from 5 ships over a period of 2 months. Whiskey, canned goods, and tobacco were also involved. The gangs who work the ports in the meat racket usually depend on one key man. He's the man who checks the amounts of meat loaded onto the trucks. His job in the racket is to give a certificate to the truck driver for a certain quantity of meat, say a ton. A ton and a quarter is loaded onto the truck from the ship. The driver heads for the nearest food ministry depot with the meat. He arrives with a ton of meat, as stated in his certificate. But on the way, the extra quarter ton has disappeared, gone to the black market. Honest drivers have been blackmailed, and stolen goods have been planted in their trucks for the police to find. One way the authorities have of dealing with the situation is to fine and even imprison wholesalers, retailers, and consumers found guilty of buying or selling foods for more than the government price. By and large, food seems to be handled honestly. But in Britain, like any other country, there are always some people who pay extra for what they want. And they're the ones who keep the black market going. We don't hear much about Denmark, what's going on there these days. But yesterday I did hear something interesting. My barber is a Dane who has lived many years in England. He said he just had a letter from his brother in Denmark, sent via New York. The barber said, "My brother told me that our old father died suddenly, and between the lines, he said he'd been killed by the Nazis because they were getting rid of the old people in Denmark who couldn't work for them." The barber said, "My brother told me that our sister's husband talked too much at the funeral about the way our father died, and that night he himself was taken out and shot." This is John McVane in London, returning you to New York.
And now, back in New York, we have a dispatch from Mexico City. All German diplomatic and consular representatives in Mexico have been interned, and the Mexican government has ordered the Japanese minister and his staff to stay in their legation buildings. Both the German and the Jap diplomatic staffs probably will be taken to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, That is where Axis diplomats to Washington have been confined. Kuibyshev, Russia. The former Russian ambassador to Washington hopes the American nations will unite in deeds as well as words as a result of the Pan-American Conference. Writing in the English language newspaper, Moscow News, Alexander Troyanovsky says aggression is knocking at the door of every American country. Overseas once more now, this time for news of the Pacific War. For this report, we switch you to the newsroom in San Francisco.
For today's story from the newest battle zone in the Pacific, we take you now to Sidney Albright in Batavia.
This is Sidney Albright speaking in Batavia. The time is 8:36 on Wednesday evening. Today's communique tells of skirmishes between Netherlands Indies and Japanese troops on the border of Sarawak, in which 18 Japanese and one Dutch soldier were killed. Enemy bombers raided ships in the harbor of Balikpapan without inflicting damage. Dutch bombers raided Tarakan, scoring a direct hit on a Japanese ship. A Dutch island near Singapore was bombed by Japanese planes, killing one soldier and slightly wounding three others. A flying boat of the Netherlands Navy bombed a Japanese air base in the southern part of the Philippines. Direct hits were scored on the runway and barracks. The plane returned safely to its base. An official statement disclosed that General Wavell, the supreme commander of the Allied fighting forces in the Southwest Pacific, arrived in this country with his staff. Other high officers of the supreme command, who are officially reported to be in Java, are General Brett, Admiral Hart, General Brereton, and General Parnell. Details of the invasion of Tarakan have been given out by the government. After the Japanese had extensively raided Tarakan, it became evident about the middle of last week that they intended to invade the island. In the morning of Thursday, January 8th, when three Japanese bombers arrived, they were met by anti-aircraft fire. One bomber crashed and was destroyed, all members of the crew being killed. The two remaining bombers attacked a Dutch warship lying near Tarakan without causing any damage. On Friday, eight bombers returned to attack the warship. Some members of the crew were slightly wounded when bombs exploded near the ship. In the afternoon of the same day, a large fleet was observed 15 miles east of the southernmost coast of Tarakan Island, off Tanjung Bato. This fleet consisted of six cruisers, six destroyers, several transport ships, and one tanker. About 5 o'clock, 14 transports, under cover of the fleet, approached the island and were attacked by Dutch bombers. Two direct hits were scored, and three enemy aircraft were shot down. Early Sunday morning, the Japanese commenced landing operations near Amo, on the east coast of the island, unloading troops simultaneously at Tanjung Bato and Amo. The garrison at Amo was forced to withdraw after having inflicted heavy losses on the enemy. The Japanese then started their march to the oil fields. They were later thrown back, so that on Sunday evening, the Dutch were able to consolidate their forces in a semicircle around Tarakan. After continually sending new troops into the battle, they finally succeeded in breaking through during the night of Sunday-Monday. Meanwhile, when it had become clear that the Japanese would attempt a landing with far superior forces, the order was given to destroy the oil wells, oil tanks, the pumps, and the oil supplies, which were left on the island. This destruction was completed on Sunday morning. On Monday, after heavy fighting, in which the casualties on both sides were high, the Japanese had advanced so far that they were encircled. The garrison, which was still fighting, only was able to fight in separate small groups. After heavy bombardment from the air and hampered by the heat of the flaming wells, the garrison finally surrendered. Notwithstanding the superiority of the enemy, the purpose of the resistance had been fully achieved. Namely, to prevent the Japanese from obtaining a single drop of oil. I now return you to San Francisco.
Now back to the newsroom in New York.
Finally, we turn to our own capital to hear Earl Godwin speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. You know, the city of Washington, now the capital of the United Nations, in its war effort at least, leaps to the alert this morning as the hard-hitting, pleasant-spoken Don Nelson takes over the whole huge effort to produce all the goods to smash the Axis on its own home ground. This is the one-man head which so many people have been hoping for and recommending. Nelson, who came from Sears Roebuck and has stood out persistently and consistently for harder work and a bigger goal, and a realization of the tremendous fight ahead, may also become the one-man boss for the whole Supreme 26-Nation Council on Production and Manufacture for the war effort. And if so, he would become the biggest factory and shop boss the world ever dreamed of. At any rate, right now, the job is to get going. When the Senate meets sometime today or tomorrow, the Truman Committee, which has been delving into defense and now war production, will present a long report on which it lashes at the slow speed of defense production up to this moment. The report, or the committee, intends, so I hear, to criticize the motor car industry severely for its business-as-usual attitude last year, with war mounting like a flood tide. Whatever the criticism of the past, I believe this man Nelson will be about as tough a boss as the toughest football coach that his native haunts of the Midwest ever produced. Nelson comes from Hannibal, Missouri, first. His father was a railroad locomotive engineer out there, and the boy got his education, and a good one, they tell me, the hard way. He worked at odd jobs for it, and he was working hard for $70,000 a year, something like that, for that big mail order house, and something tells me that they don't pay a fella any more than he's worth. When the president pulled him in here to put speed and system into the defense effort, Nelson found what others have found: cross currents, red tape, cross currents beneath the main drive, the jealousies and the harpooning, the left wingers who can never get the idea that a businessman is safe to deal with, and vice versa. The officials who run around to whispering columnists and calumniators to plant critical stories against men who are really doing something. Nelson came through all this and is now ready to crack the whip, blow the whistle, and overtake Hitler, which must be done ere we hit Hitler. The president cracks down on the farm block something after the manner that I've outlined in these broadcasts. That is the matter of price control, which the president wants to be accomplished without tangling with the farm block, without mixing up with anybody, without having any modifying boards, and so forth. The president wants a man to be at the price control lever and operate the lever without having a debate. The way events are turning out, it looks this morning that the president would win out over the farm block, which is certainly turning every stone and every wheel to maintain in the price control bill the high level of farm prices, and perhaps the veto of the Department of Agriculture against any prices that the farmers don't like. House Committee specializing in the small businessman and its plight takes on the automobile dealer today. There's something to be done to keep 500,000 dealers, salesmen, and other employees from starvation. One suggestion comes from the trade to permit the manufacture of a very plain, small, untrimmed car, right down to elements of going and carrying people, a Jeep like the Army uses. A few hundred thousand of these on a non-competitive basis might keep the automobile trade alive. And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the latest news at home and abroad. Your reporters this morning have been John McVane from London, Sidney Albright from Batavia, and Earl Godwin from Washington. For latest news, keep tuned to this station.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.